This is the course or the class on the artist's way. It is not the course on the artist's way, because this is gleaned from a 13-week course that I do, 2 hours a week. So as you can see, what you're going to get is a brief introduction to the process, which I hope will inspire you all to run out and buy the book and form your own groups and do it yourselves, because that's the whole point of it. This is the book, The Artist's Way, A Spiritual Path to Higher Creativity by Julia Cameron. And she's also written another book, which basically has many of the same ideas and the same tools, which I'll be introducing you to, just approaches it a little differently, a little deeper in some cases, different exercises, but the same good stuff, and that's called The Vein of Gold. So she had learned a few things from that one and put together some more ideas, but also excellent. I found that between the two, the first one was much more conducive to classes and the way that the chapters were broken up. Some of these chapters are very lengthy, some of the exercises are lengthy, and we found that we tried to do a class around it, and it was sort of moderately successful. But the book that really works for classes seems to be this one. To start with, The Artist's Way is very much a spiritual journey. It's a spiritual path. It's a meditation. And she's very clear about it. It is about getting in touch with your creativity. And I'm guessing for most of you, for most of us, there is that feeling that our lives may feel too flat. Oftentimes, we feel like our last creative act may have been 20 years ago, or that we just feel a need to, we remember the passion we had as a young person, perhaps in some projects that we got involved with. Maybe it was artistic, maybe it was creative in some other way. And we remember that rush, we remember what that feels like. But there's also the feeling that I haven't felt that in a very long time. What happened? And so this is like a recovery process. I think she refers to the 12-step program, and I have no doubt that she was pretty familiar with it. And I think in ways some of those ideas come through. And that it's very much connected to a higher power, however you want to name that higher power. What she considers core to this program is that you're not just doing it yourself. You're not just trying to recover your creativity as a solo journey. It doesn't usually work in any kind of recovery program. In a sense, this is a recovery program. So I just want to make sure I don't miss any steps as I go along. God as creator is throughout the work central to the process. God by whatever name you want to call that source. And for some people it's the inner light. For some people they would name it God. For some people that name would definitely get in the way, and so they may call it goddess. They may call it, Buddha. Whatever you consider your higher power, it really doesn't matter. As I said, it's a personal journey in that sense. Also, as I started to mention, this is very much a tribal process. So some people go through this book alone and find it useful and helpful. But where I see the real transformations are when people get together and form artistic clusters of 4 to 10 people. My classes usually are 10 people, 8 to 10 people. But you may find it just as useful to do it with 3 others. My classes tend to be a little more formalized because I come in as the facilitator. People pay me money. I bring in a lot of other resources and a lot of ideas to the process, but would certainly encourage anybody to just call up 3 friends and say, I really want to go through this book and let's see what happens, and just meet once a week and do it. That also works. The reason we need other people is that they can act as believing mirrors. We all bring a lot of blocks to why we have gotten in our own way in terms of this creativity that we all have. And it's just in the same way people who come and say, I can't sing, I can't dance, and I'm very quick to say, oh, yes, you can. What's important here is the process. I care very little about the finished product in this particular journey. What's important is that you're feeling your own creativity. And so in the class, one of the early questions we bring up is, what is an artist? And very often people come with a whole list of stereotypes about what an artist is, most of which have nothing to do with themselves. I'm not an artist. I really don't know why I'm here in this class. When I hear this a lot, I'm probably in the wrong place because I'm really not an artist. And what I try and convince people by the end of the class is we're all artists in many, many different ways. I go into someone's home and I see, a friend's house for lunch. I still remember this. This was probably 10 years ago. I went to one friend's home for lunch and it was just a casual, oh, let's get together. Oh, you can come to my house. And she had laid the table so beautifully. And the way the dishes matched, the way the flowers looked, I still can bring that back. I mean, that was, to me, an incredible gift. And I don't even remember what we ate. What I remember was the way she set that table. And that was art to me. That was an artistic and highly creative act. And so that's the kind of creativity we're talking about. It's not hooked to any certain art form. Some people may be very specific in their needs. They really want to get back to their writing. They really know that there's something there they want to develop. They really want to paint. And for some people, it's that they really want to launch off into some new business endeavor and start their own business. That's a very creative act, And so getting the creative juices running, if it means that once a week you create some little art project or some piece of writing or write a song or something, it's amazing how it flows into every bit of your life, into every piece of your life. And you find yourself thinking more creatively and able to look at problems, in whole different ways. So as I said, this is much more than just how to paint a picture or, it's not that. So what we need our friends for are as guides and companions and as believing mirrors. When we get together in the group, one of the first things we talk about, which I mentioned already, is we don't really care that much about the product, of what you bring. And each week I will give everyone an assignment, and the way that I do it is, okay, this week I want you to create something around the theme of strawberries. And first time I did that, I was just blown away. I've taught this class six different courses. And the first time I gave that theme, which was my very, and I didn't know how this was gonna work. One person came in with a female strawberry necklace. Another person came in with this exquisite little story about strawberries outside of her room in her dorm that she remembered, and when some student, she'd been lovingly nurturing these plants, and then some student comes in one day when she was out of the room and ate the whole batch, and this is how she felt about that. And someone else had written a strawberry song. Someone else had drawn a wonderful little picture. It was just, we were so excited. One of the most exciting parts of this group that we formed was watching other people's creative process. Now that was unique in that so many people came with finished pieces of work. People come into the classes from all different places, and some of them are mothers of young children, and all they can do is make it to the class. Forget the homework, forget all the other things that they, felt like they were supposed to do. And so I learned early as the facilitator to let them off the hook and say, look, if all you can do is just make it here, it's all right. And if you've had a chance to think about an artwork and say, well, if I'd have had time, I had this idea about this song, or I was going to write about, fine. We just want, it works as a little mantra when you have something to think about or some theme, and all through the week you're kind of thinking about it. And maybe when you come, all you've got are the ideas. That's all right. So to the believing mirrors would be someone said, look, I couldn't do a thing. I couldn't think of a thing. And then, so out of the group come the questions. What got in the way? What happened that you couldn't spend even, you know, half an hour or an hour thinking about this? What happened? Because so many, that's the next section we're going to talk about, so many of us come with so many blocks to our own creativity. But I want to say one other thing first. This is, for many people, consider this a practice of meditation. And as with any kind of meditation, it is transformative. And in my classes, I've seen this again and again. And I've seen the passion that starts coming out in people's work. I see them rediscovering fun, you know, which is something we really let go in our childhood so often. But I see people coming back and, oh, I really had fun this week. And it's just like, wow, you know, a new way of seeing, you know, it's transformative. It leads you to kind of expect the unexpected. You learn to find the synchronicities, the unexpected things that happen, and how much this inner source of wisdom, or God, or whatever you may call it, is working in your behalf. That once you're on track and identify and start moving in that direction, how so many things conspire to help move you that way, if you keep your eyes open. But keeping your eyes open is part of the block. Okay, so let's talk. I'm going to talk a bit about creative blocks. Most of us, well, all of us, are in some ways creatively blocked. And part of the important work that we have to do is to recognize that, first of all, that we are creatively blocked. And then to start, and one way to recognize this is if you see, well, for me, if I saw a singer-songwriter standing on stage doing something really wonderful, and I felt really jealous, and I felt like just picking them apart. Okay, that is a signal to me that she's doing something that's making me recognize that I want to be doing more of that. Yeah. So if you feel kind of picky and jealous about a friend who's doing something creative, it may be a signal to you that that's a direction you need to move, you know, that jealousy is your own incompleteness or your own feeling blocked. There's something called shadow artists who can be useful because they're often the people who turn out as the art administrators, the people who put on the shows, who administer, who do all behind the scenes work. They can also be the people who would really much rather be on stage and maybe had the talent to, but somehow shut down through fear, through whatever blocks they may have had. And so they're on the sidelines and they're buying the art. You know, they're supporting the arts, but they just can't quite bring themselves to do it, or maybe wouldn't consider themselves creative. Chances are they're highly creative. It can also be very negative. It could be the friend who comes over and you've just created your first painting, and it's up on the wall, and you kind of see. And this friend comes over and,
what's for lunch?
I mean, it could be a family member, it could be a close friend. There are many, many shadow artists lurking out there. And there, when you begin creating, there's a need for you to protect your work and to be careful with whom you share it. And to identify who are your believing mirrors, who are the people who are going to support your journey and your process, and who aren't going to be there looking at the finished product going, don't give up your day job. You know, I mean, words I have heard on my journey. That's one little thing I meant to insert, and I kind of leaped in a little fast. My work is as a singer-songwriter. You may have guessed that from my comment. And as a teacher. And I've been writing songs and performing for close to 30 years now. Next year's my 30th year. Amazing. And so I think the reason that I love to teach this is not that I'm any further along the path or that I know any more than anybody else does. It's just that I'm more familiar with the terrain. I've been doing it a long time. So when she brings up these issues, it's like, oh, I remember that. Oh, yeah, I know that one. You know, and I still, part of the reason I continue to teach, too, is that I need the process. I need to continually put myself in the process to keep my own creativity alive and remind myself what my blocks are to do the work to unblock. Okay, so what are some things that block our creativity? Okay, we talked about some of the things that, ways that we can begin to know that we ourselves are blocked. And then we talk about protecting ourselves from the kind of negative comments that may come from the people closest to us that can just halt us right there. And also, it's all of those messages that we received when we were growing up. Would you please just mouth the words, you know, when we sing? Okay. Yeah, that picture is pretty good, but you know, stems are really green. You know, you really need to make that green. Or you know, you're going outside the lines there. It's looking really messy. Or how about if I just fix that up for you just a little bit? You know, if you just. Heard them all. And the hard thing is that we incorporate these messages and we give them to ourselves. It's this trick, you know, this really ugly trick that happens because the voices of the censors and the judges out there, which are so destructive, we tend to take into ourselves and give them to ourselves. And until we can identify. And sometimes, we can't always, but I've been in some powerful experiences actually in a songwriting class recently where I said, it's really important to find that voice and to stick it out here and to listen to whose voice it is, really, you know. Where did that voice come from? And this man in my class said, oh, I mean, it was sort of like an epiphany, and he said, it came from the father of my two best friends, and we would do things a lot together, but the father was always putting me down, that I couldn't do things as well as his sons, and he said, I never realized that before. He said, I'm always saying, oh, he couldn't do it. It's his voice, you know. And after class, the man went away and he cried for an hour, he told me later, and then he wrote a song, first song he'd ever written. You know? And I came back and shared it the next day. When I think of it, I still get teary because it was so powerful. Identifying the censor may be a very useful exercise, you know, to put it out there so that you could talk to it and you can yell at it and you can say, look, Mom, okay, I know that my brother was the real artist in the family according to you, but hey, I had a lot of gifts, you know, so just shut up. You know, I mean, you need to be able to do that. Maybe you need to externalize it with some kind of a symbol or some kind of a picture and put it up by in your workspace, you know. And it's nice to create some kind of little creative workspace. You know, stick it up there and talk to it with those voices. You know, I mean, throw darts at it. I mean, whatever you want to do, but have it there. And when those voices come, you just shake your finger and you talk to it, you know, because it's not you. It's really important to find those voices. Okay, then we also have all the messages from a society that's pretty toxic to artists. It's very toxic to artists. As a singer, I run across people all the time who, and children, this is what's so enormously sad, after they get past about 5 or 6, they stop singing, you know, because they don't sound like the people on the radio. What I know as a recording artist is nobody sounds like the people on the radio, including the artist, because we've all had, you know, 3 hours to do one line, you know, and it gets tweaked at that, you know, and amplified and da-da-da-da. It's not real, you know. But you've got kids who don't sound like that and have just been sold a bill of goods, you know. And it's true of dance, it's true of so many art forms. Well, oh, my pictures don't look like that. And sometimes by badly trained teachers who continue the damage or do more damage to kids' very fragile sense of themselves as artists. So a society also that has a whole lot of stereotypes about what an artist is. Okay, can I throw out a few? What is an artist?
Maybe some people think that an artist is a person who earns their living through their art, and they get paid for what they're doing.
So it's only the professionals that are really the artists.
Or I had a head of an art department tell me this story. She has her art class draw a picture of an artist, and every single student, including every girl in the class, drew a man.
Whoa.
That's chilly.
There's a difference between a chef and a cook. Think about it. The chef is always the guy with the big tall hat, and the cook is overweight and slinging hash. Isn't it awful?
Oh, yeah.
I was going to ask you, and maybe this is not appropriate, and you may get there, but I would like to be a better reflecting mirror, affirmative reflecting mirror, and all these things you've said, I try not to say to my kids, but because they were said to me, and my art teacher in high school, which I still think was wonderful, actually, in fact, took my paper and did something to it, a watercolor, and I didn't watercolor again. And it was really, well, for a long time, I did, like, maybe 10 years ago, I picked it up and discovered that I can do that. But I don't hear her. But what she showed me was so incredible that she showed me how to put light on the paper. And I mean, that's pretty basic. You gotta know that. So she still was really a very good teacher.
Okay. Well, just to be able to make the separation.
Of
what was good and what gift she received, but what was very destructive about what she did, so that you don't pass that on, as long as you can make that separation. But
it's hard because you don't know their heart. It's like asking a kid, what is that?
I think I learned, because I was trained as a teacher, I learned early on that the proper question is not, what is that? It's, tell me about that. Tell me about that.
That's good.
Much more, you get a lot more. So how to be a good believing mirror? That's a very good question. And I think it is asking the questions and eliciting those kinds of responses. And mainly, for me, and of course our class was unique, but we're there about building alliances and building, you know, self-esteem and helping people just reach towards their own. I'm not there as a technique instructor. You know, people go other places if they want technique. No. What we're there is to affirm. So a believing mirror in a group like that, you're not picking apart the work. You might make suggest if they ask for it. And usually when a work is presented, we just ask for a little comment, you know, to just question about the process and where did you get stuck and how did it feel. And if it's wonderful, we may all go, ooh, ah, you know, we may do that. But we're not there to make suggestions unless the person says, well, you know, I had a little trouble, I wasn't sure about, you know. And then there might be a place where people could say, or I might say, go talk at the break if you have some suggestions or want to talk about it one-on-one, you know, or have some thoughts about it. That's okay, you know. But really, it's a different kind of process than a technique process. And mostly technique, you know, some of the groups, like I'm also in a songwriter group, and I feel kind of battered and bruised sometimes there. Because there I elicit and I ask for real specific feedback on work. We all do, that's why we're there. We're trying to improve our technique. And there's more of a place where there's room for that, but only within the context of being very safe with these three other women that I'm in this group with, and having a great deal of respect for their skill, and knowing that I don't have to agree with what they say. Sometimes all three of them will say something about a change they think would be good, and I may still say, I just can't agree, you know, and to hang on to that and say, no, this song says more of what I want to say, has more integrity if I leave that idea in there. Like, you know. So it's being able to stand on your own too and be able to listen to it and use it if it's helpful and turn it away if it's not. But mostly it's, I've also heard of writers groups that are just cutthroat, you know. Mm-hmm. They're there and they just, you know, there isn't the trust. So when you form it, you want to be very careful about the kind of people you let in your group, because one person like that can destroy your group, because nobody wants to come back, you know, after their work has been ripped apart. Forget it. You know, I'm not interested. So you very carefully find your believing mirrors. When I write a song, I have a few people that are my special critics, you know. My husband's one of them. Because he has an extensive background in English and is a really good critic. And so I'll say, here's the song, and I trust him to say, because I know he loves my work too, and I trust him to say, I didn't understand that part. Then it's like, okay, I need to go and make that part clearer. It wasn't clear, okay? And another friend that I go to too, who also loves what I do, and I go to her for the specific and say, well, what do you think, does this work? And I trust her totally. You know? There are other people very close to me I would never take a new song to. And some of them may be other songwriters who may have the skill, but may have their own axe to grind or their own special way of looking. So be careful about how you form those circles around you.
It's been my experience as a visual artist that even other visual artists don't necessarily have the verbal or design tools to give me what I'm asking for. You know, I show them a picture and what do you think? And the friends I have are always very careful. Oh yeah, that's nice. Mm-hmm. Everybody has an opinion, but very few people have the skills to give you the critique. Well, the color here is not working, or the lines are doing this, or I was married to an artist for a period of time, and he'd say, don't like it. Well, what don't you like? The color, the shapes, what's not working? I had to drag out of him, and I had a very excellent high school art teacher, and she gave me all those skills. And when I run up against another artist, I always assume they have those skills, and they don't. They don't. So it is very difficult, at least as a visual artist where I come from, to find someone that has the skills and can communicate and that you can trust.
Yeah. See? There's actually a woman in our songwriting group whose songs to me are pretty mediocre. I don't particularly care for her songs, but she's the best person for critique of any of us. She spent 30 years as a teacher and she knows the process. And I sit there, and I think I'm one of the stronger writers, but I sit there in the group just tongue-tied because there would be something I know isn't right, but I can't identify it. She can. You know? So it isn't the person who's the best artist who may be the best person to critique.
You were talking about, though, the perception of what is an artist, and she said they drew pictures of men as artists. And my son is a professional musician, and I would say the perception of many people is in that he is probably less manly. That he is effeminate. He's not practical. He's not a real man.
Especially if he's a dancer. That's really true.
He doesn't live in the real world.
Yeah. Irresponsible, maybe?
Works real hard and does live in a real world. Right. But it's music.
And that's true of most artists I know. But we still carry, one of the things that keeps us from being artists or wanting our children to be artists is we carry around this, they're maybe crazy, they're loners, they'll die a young death, they're psychotic, they're drunk, they're, you know, because there are a few out there who are very famous, you know, who died young or committed suicide, or, you know, we all know stories like that. But they're a pretty small percentage, you know. But those are some of the ways we block ourselves. You know, they're doomed. They're unhappy. They're born not made. Promiscuous, you know. Well, that's right. or just this elite group of people that are somehow just spring out of nowhere, who are just exceptionally talented, but not anything like us. So that's again what some of the cultural messages that get in the way of us reaching our own creativity. I'd like to hear from you now about some of your personal, if you have personal favorite blocks or personal sensory, I'll tell you a few. There's also food, drug, alcohol, all those deadlies, you know, also we use. Well, I'd like to write a song, but gee, there's a good show on TV. I think I'd rather, you know, I mean, there are many ways we deaden ourselves to our own creativity. I think there are probably a time when women were more creative when they didn't have the same kind of distractions.
Right.
So there are all those things that really deaden us. And that we use, you know, emotionally a lot of different ways, but certainly these are all things that can block our creativity. Okay, what are some of your favorites? Favorite blocks, have you identified some? Or sensors, you know, that you have identified, stories that you know probably stopped you?
In, I think, first grade when we had this, I can say, I've written a poem about this, got this sheet, and it's this cat sitting there with his big picture hat on its head, and I colored the cat yellow, and I colored the hat purple, and I did it right, you know, I stayed in the lines and green eyes, and I thought it was marvelously beautiful, and the teacher came by and said, whoever saw a yellow cat?
Oh,
ooh, so I have written a poem called The Cat's Where It Is. It took me 50 years later to write that.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, I think that killed any, I'm not, you know, I've never had any confidence in any of my artistic visual, you know, since then I've had support in my writing skills because of people that I've written for have been supportive, but I believe I died on the art scene that day.
Yeah.
I was a very good student. I'd always had very good grades and very good, and she gave me a D on that day.
Oh.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I just share a story about my daughter. You guys can't resist. You know how they get these exercises at school where you know, color all the yellow, all the nines orange, color all the ones blue, and, you know, because you're supposed to make a picture when you're all done. It's more of a math exercise than an art exercise. But Daddy brought hers home, and it was all different colors. And I said, why didn't you follow the instructions? Well, I didn't like those colors.
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
Yes.
I love
it.
She's on the arts wing, I'm
sure. unless they explain what they're doing, then it's, I think that the artist has license. Unless they explain what they're doing, you're making a picture. You know.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I think a similar thing happened to me in first grade.
Yeah.
And I think it also was a lesson in something other than art. It was probably a lesson in how to follow directions.
Oh, yes.
Everyone was doing the same thing at exactly the same time.
Uh-huh.
I came to first grade with no experience of working with construction paper or scissors or any of those materials. And so the teacher passed out, I think it was blue and yellow construction paper and a pair of scissors.
Oh.
I was so excited to have those in my hands. And she started giving directions and I wasn't really listening and I started to cut my paper. And I cut it the wrong way. So that I ended up with a clown almost exactly like everybody else's, except that it was half as big. And she put them all up across the little bullet board about this high that goes all over the blackboards, all around the room with these clowns, and there was mine. And it was different, and I didn't think too much of it until all the eighth grade girls came in for their singing class, where the first grade teacher taught it, and they all laughed and laughed about that. Who made that clown? And that took me until I was in my 40s, I think, to really think I might be able to do something that wouldn't be, you know, ridiculed like that. And the lesson wasn't an art lesson. I'm sure it wasn't an art lesson, really.
But it seems to me that a creative way for that teacher to have handled it would have been to point it out and say, well, isn't this fun?
She did point out that I had to follow directions and I couldn't have any more paper because you couldn't waste paper here.
She could have handled it so differently, you know. She just could have said, well, look at this, isn't this fun?
This
is what's happening.
You could have made two clowns out of the amount of paper I gave you.
Yeah.
I think there must be a ton of experiences out there like that, because in my chapbook that I have put together, my poetry, I said that I think it's pretty good, but the one comment I get is for more people is on "Do cats wear hats?" from the people, from the printer that printed it, from people that have picked it up, you know, who know nothing but really could care less.
Yeah.
That, so that speaks. A lot of people have been in that rejection seat with their art, I think.
Do you by any chance have it with you?
No, I don't. Oh. It's packed in my bag.
Okay.
It's not very long, but it tells the story of that incident. And people resonate to that experience, and I thought, why? And I realized when I heard the stories, a lot of people were.
I'd love to have a copy of that poem.
Okay, really, you're so sensitive.
Yeah. Well, can we? Do we have a few more comments? Then we should probably move on, because the time. I knew it. I mean, how do you condense 13 weeks into 1 hour?
But I started a pottery class, and I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
And I'd never done it before, and that was one of the things I promised myself. If someone complimented me, I wasn't going to say, "Oh no, it's dumb." I was going to accept the compliment before I made that commitment to myself, and I found that that was good. And I found I could give compliments as well, easier, but I accepted what people said to me, and I said, without being too critical. So that's something that I worked on this past year to help you.
Oh, that's a good one.
Otherwise, it's
to be able to let it in past all the censor's voices, you know, past all the immediate, "Oh, that's really dumb," which, you know, you picked up somewhere, you know, and to be able to let it get through that.
I think one of the blocks that I have is sometimes in your life you get so busy doing that you just don't have time to think of being creative, and so unless you sit back and stop all the busyness, it's going to block your creative juices.
Busyness is a huge block to your creativity. Carving out time for yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, especially to young moms, I have to say, having been there myself too. But the difficulty. Well, we could spend a lot more time on this, but I do want to get to the basic tools. By the way, this book, usually the bookstore here carries it, and they just happen to be out, and I very foolishly did not give them notice to stack up on them because I was going to do this. But you will find this very easily through your bookstores. I think it's been a number one, or a major seller. So you'll find it. Basic tools. In this book, Julia offers two basic tools. She added a third with her next book, with a vein of gold. So we'll go over each of those. Now, these are daily practices, daily meditations, if you will. Well, one's more of a weekly, but two of them are definitely daily. The first is morning pages. And morning pages are to be done every morning, you know, at a regular time. And many people say, "I can't do it in the morning." Try. There's a reason. Try very hard to make it in the morning. It's free-form writing. It's filling up 3 pages. Now, this is a kind of writing that's like automatic writing. It's the kind of writing where you don't let the censor get in the way. You don't worry about grammar. You don't worry particularly about what you're saying. You just let it flow. This is the garbage dump. This is getting stuff out of the way. It's a cleansing, if you will. It's a meditation. What I find often are the first page or two, especially if I'm distressed with people in the family, with things that are going on, it's a dumping ground, and I just get it out. And what's interesting is I also find then that I'm better able to cope with the situation that day. By having written it out, it sometimes diminishes it. It's kind of like, "Oh, okay, well, all right, I can let this go now. You know, you've got it out." It's 3 pages. I have to say that she says this size page. She's also a writer, but she insists it should be this size page. So I'm not going to argue with Julia. I will say that my size pages are a little half that sheet, because I use the little Well, that's fine, but mine are even smaller. They're the little steno pads. Because I can carry those around with me. I keep them by my bed. It's what works for me. And 3 pages of that is about right for me. So the reason for filling up the pages, as I said, is in part, it's after you get past the daily irritations and this stuff, you know, I really don't want to write these pages. You may fill up 3 pages with that, you know. I hate the morning pages. But if you keep at it, you'll find that dreams start entering the pages. You may find that unrealized dreams start coming out in those pages. I find that in working through the book, there are really good questions at the end of each chapter, exercises that you're asked to do. The morning pages are often a good place to start thinking about that. So I may use the first few pages of just scribbling and then start, okay, well, I'm kind of tired of this now, I'm ready to let this go, and the third page will start getting more creative, you know. But you gotta get through those first pages first. So she's pretty demanding that that's the most important basic tool of this process, to get your creative juices flowing. And usually I can do it in about 15 minutes. If it's taking you an hour and a half, you're not doing it as automatic writing. You're thinking too much about it. You know, you're trying too hard. So most people can do it a lot more quickly than that. So just keep it going. Consider this as, again, a dumping ground, a way to just get it out there. Yes?
Does it work to do that with a computer, or is
no.
the process different?
She's very insistent. It's about the hand moving across the page. It's a very different process. I find for myself, when I'm writing a song, I can't put it on the computer because there's something about it that feels finished, you know, that sets it in stone in a way. It's not true, it's not a logic thing, but it for me sets it in stone in a certain kind of creative writing. But as a writer, you know, or when I'm writing lines or doing all kinds of stuff, I use it constantly. But if there's a certain kind of creative process where I really need the feel of the hand moving across the page. So she's very insistent that a computer will not do. Then again, try it, you know, compare it, see what works for you. Okay, every day, without fail, non-negotiable, no one else reads them. This is very important. And you rarely read them yourself. She does have you in this process about partway through go back and read them just to see what emerges, you know. Most of it you don't care to read again, you know, you're just dumping it, you're getting it out of the way. It's a way of clearing the logic brain in order to get to the artist's brain. It's a meditation. You will at times hate and resent them.
Mostly.
But you will meet the creator through the process. Because that is the hope. That's the meditation. It's the place where you send notice of dreams, dissatisfactions, and hopes. What I find, too, is it's necessary for me to keep a separate to-do list. She doesn't say this, but I found it true. Because what will emerge when I'm partway through is, I've got to remember to get the cat food. So I've got a little to-do list, and I'll just stick that right next to it while I'm, you know, making those little kind of notes that I want to keep track of over here so I don't get stuck on them, because they're wonderful distractions. You know, so then come back. All right. These will be very brief introductions to these processes, but they're good tools that I want to send you away with. If you never buy the book or do any of this, they're still good, useful tools. The second, and when we have our groups, the first thing we do is check with everybody about their artist pages, because it's a way of keeping people honest. How many days did you do your art morning pages? Because everybody would tend to just kind of go. Maybe get real enthused the first couple of weeks, but by about the 6th or 7th week when it's getting really hard and you really don't want to do it, you sort of know you've got to go to the group and you've got to check in about your morning pages, so you might as well do them because you don't want to be embarrassed, you know. And so it kind of keeps, that's again part of the usefulness of the group. So you kind of check in, okay, you know. And most people, not all, find them ultimately very useful, even the people who were the most resistant to them at first.
So I would suggest if you're finding a lot of resistance, things you're feeling the most resistance is exactly the area you need to move into. The exercises she has at the back of the book, there you'll read through and say, well, I'm not interested in doing that. That may be exactly the one you need to do. So you may choose, when you're first doing the process, half the exercises that you'll actually get to at the end of the chapter, and then start narrowing down on the ones you most don't want to do. So, okay, second basic tool is the artist date. So we've had the first tool where we use it, you know, sort of dumping stuff out. Second tool, the artist date, is where we fill the well. It's a two-hour block of time. And believe me, for many people, a two-hour block of time in a week is extremely difficult, especially when you add the other limitation that you're supposed to do it alone. Take yourself to a movie, a play, the museum, the fabric store, anything that'll get your creative juices flowing. And what's fun is in the class, I start asking people what their artist date was and how creative. I mean, how sometimes it's, I took a hot bath by myself, a bubble bath, and I lit incense, and I locked the door, and it's an artist's day. What fills you? It might be, as I said, a fabric store, because you just go and just feel the textures and the colors and just let it go to an art store and just play with some of the materials. There's just wonderful materials out there now. Play with. So go play with materials. It could be one woman went out on her lunch hour, and often they're not 2 hours. Julia would like it to be 2 hours. You have to fit out what works for you. But would go and blow bubbles on her lunch hour. Right in the middle of the street downtown, she'd be blowing bubbles, you know, because it reminded her of play. And a lot of times it's the things that remind you. What's playful reminds you about playing, you know. That's a good artist date. Go swing in the park, you know. How long has it been? So those are the kinds of things that we do for an artist date. Filling the well. See, I had some examples. Cooking. Really good for some people, just to not just cook, but you know, to be the chef, you know, to really make it a creative experience, you know, and set the table in such a way that, you know, it can be. Lately, a lot of us got into feng shui and got books on it. In some of my classes, that was just a big thing, that their artist dates would be feng shuiing, you know, their room, which is a way, it's sort of a spiritual way of organizing your home, and there are certain corners where certain things go, and if you want to bring more money into your life, then you put some symbol of that in a certain corner, and it's much more than that. If you want to work on your relationship, here's the corner of your room where you may put a picture of your wedding, or, you know, it's this whole philosophy around it. It's great fun. So a lot of us got into that, and also simplifying. So a lot of times it would be about cleaning the closets, you know, and going to the Goodwill to, you know, find something really that brings out the artist in ourselves, you know, that maybe a new scarf, or who knows what might get that. That could be an artist date right there. Okay, so that's how am I doing? The third basic tool is a 20-minute walk every day. And it's amazing, again, how difficult this can be for people. And again, it's a 20-minute walk alone. Even the dog can be a distraction. Because during this 20 minutes, the idea is that you really pay attention. It's another way of filling the well. Yeah. You breathe. You walk in as more of a walking meditation. And she says that 1 hour a week, that walk should be at not as familiar a place. Like your 20-minute walk may be around two blocks or something that you normally have a routine going. For the other walk, the 1 hour walk, you go somewhere else, you know, and take a walk through a park or something where the images are new and different. She also suggests that one of the walks during the week be a gratitude walk. in which you spend that time being in an attitude of gratefulness. And that is a powerful meditation, to spend 20 minutes just being thankful. Okay, thank you. And thinking of all the reasons to be thankful. So I found that to be personally quite powerful. Let's spend a few minutes to see what you all do to get the juices flowing. Do you have some ideas of what you do, maybe when you're feeling stuck, when you're feeling dry? Is it to sit with all the lights off and listen to a beautiful piece of music? Now, what do you do? Because if you don't have a list, make yourself one, so that you can refer back to it at times when you feel just really flat. And you know there are certain things that work for you to kind of make you feel alive again. What are some of them?
We had great block stories. I said we had great block stories. This is harder.
Yeah, that's right. This is harder.
I think one of the easiest things for me to do is on my lunch hour, I can walk to a couple galleries and walk down and see what they're showing, and that can be very helpful.
Yes.
And it gets in the 20-minute walk, too.
Good. Good one.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
When I go through the newspaper, I don't want to read everything, but if I see an article that really is interesting, I'll cut it out. So I have a collection of articles that I cut out, and I'll go through those and look for something that gives me ideas or makes me feel like I'm connected to something that's going on in my life too, or something.
Okay. Well, you all need to get your lists going.
The library. Sometimes I go to the library,
yeah.
And I'll look at, well, even it's different magazines or anything along that line. Just how are things displayed or laid out, or what do the apps look like? You know. Mm-hmm.
Well, your challenge for your artist day is to be coming up with those kind of lists. You know. Yeah.
I suggest you spend a little time with small children.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Nothing blocked about them.
No. No. And it hooks into a part of yourself that's still a child. No. Yeah.
I've also been taught by a writing teacher to take pictures, or take one magazine or one source of pictures. I get them at the public library, and they're free magazines in Seattle. And just go through it and look for pictures around a theme or things of a certain color, or you know, just choose some kind of a limit to it. And then it usually works best with a circle. Put a circle on a piece of paper and just cut out whatever takes your fancy and make a collage out of it. Maybe add some words. And it's amazing when you're done how they all fit something. They come together somehow. And it's often a good start to something to write.
It's often a good thing to do. This collaging is a powerful tool. She uses that a lot. And often to approach it with a question. And then just start ripping images. May help you discover some of those hidden dreams. Or also just remembering back, going through family scrapbooks or talking to a parent or a relative who remembers what you were like as a kid. And what were some of the things you really loved to do? You know, those may be keys to helping you find what creative expression might really work for you. Some other things.
Just listening to music is probably how I think. A lot of times, I have some young kids, and usually by the end of the day, the little free time I have, when I get there, I'm so tired. There's nothing else I can really do, but I can put on some music, and it takes me away for a while.
It's a good one.
And I do, I love to be in a park and on a swing and go as high as I can. I still do that.
Great.
And I love that. There's still a wonderful feeling there. And I do blow soap bubbles.
Good.
I still have soap bubbles. In fact, most of the soap bubbles I've acquired lately have been from weddings. There's leftovers.
There's a whole business.
It sure beats falling down on rice, I'll tell you.
Yeah. They're pretty.
Bird seed's pretty good.
For me, there's certain music going on, and I want to feel powerful. One of the few pieces. Superman! From Superman is so powerful. It's just great. And the other one is Holds the Planets, and it's this really powerful music too. The God of War is just powerful music. And so, especially if it's a rainy day, I'm from Portland. You gotta put on that powerful music, and it helps you at least get some sort of energy going.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah.
Every Friday at 10 o'clock, Ross, who is now dead, does a 30-minute, they put on his 30-minute show, and they're still doing it. And I've been watching that with my 4-year-old grandson now for about a year, and he knows the names of these TV artists. But Ross does stuff with big, fat brushes, and he also raised some little squirrels, and once in a while he'll show these pictures of the squirrels. And I always think that's so good because it fits. You know, he says, "Oh, well, put a little one right here, and you can put them wherever yours live. This one lives right here," and he'll put a little bush in with a 2-inch brush. I love that.
Oh, yeah.
There's something bold about what he does, and he's never afraid to put it on there.
Oh, yeah.
And the pictures are not all alike. Mm-hmm. But mostly scenes and with little houses or shacks or something. And the way he does water, he just says, "Oh yes, put your tree here." And then you just take the belt knife and you make water. And then you smooth it like that with your dry 2-inch brush. And just like a feather, he says, he just tells you in 30 minutes how to do this thing. And it's gorgeous at the end. And you just know you can do it.
Have you considered taking lessons? I mean, is that something consider?
Yeah.
And how many do you get blocked because you think, "I'm too old, I can't."
Yeah. Well, that's really inspirational to take classes, especially if there's a bunch of older people like people that are blocked.
Right.
Taking the class with you, it's just so exciting.
Well, I think it also forces you to set aside time to do something. And I think that's really important. Mm-hmm. You know, another thing I got thinking about, I sort of had a weaving in my mind, but I got thinking about the one that was finished up just yesterday, and I thought it would be sort of a simple thing in your household to quickly string up some sort of a weaving that you could just kind of go to, and if you found things outside, or I've always got scraps of shoelaces, whatever, you know, you hate to throw them away, but if you had something that you could just sort of kind of come back to and work on, that might be an idea.
Did you see the eyeglass holder that was woven in there?
Exactly.
I tied a big pom pom on the end of it. That's totally perfect.
You know, a bead, you know, necklace breaks, you're never going to put it back together again. You know, I've got a few of those. So, I mean, that's just a thought.
Good thought.
Oh, I have to tell you, that reminded me of a friend of mine who had his house built. He's single and a very fine musician, but anyhow, he has this great big wall, white wall. And he drove a nail in the middle, and then he strung out all around. And then he just had this box of yarns and all his stuff there. And everyone that came put something in there until he got this huge wheel. And of course, he didn't put anything in the box that he didn't want in it. So, it was beautiful. It was mostly great red hills, orange. It was like a giant sun on this wall.
But we're almost out of time.
Sorry.
We want to just wrap it up. Oh, that's all right. There's not a lot of wrapping up to do. I think we covered the basic tools, and we covered a lot of what I wanted to cover. I think one thing to think about, or just to send you with, is the process may result, you know, going through the book, you may have times of feeling just really defiant, and may have times of feeling really giddy and excited, and may have times of a lot of grief and waves of resistance and waves of hope, you know. But the grief for the years you lost, you know, having been blocked or something some people experience. But I think it's really important to stick with the process and to watch for the synchronicities. This is a big term that's used a lot in the artist's way. And those are the events that conspire. It's like, let me think. Oh, here's a quote from Julian. It's my experience that we're much more afraid that there might be a God than that there might not be. So incidents that we experience get dismissed as mere coincidence, or we don't pay attention to them. We think, gosh, I'd really like to take piano, but I don't know any teachers. And then you meet somebody the next day, well, yeah, I happen to teach piano, you know, and you think, yeah, you know, you turn your back on that. That was just coincidence. That doesn't mean anything. And I'm still not going to take piano. Okay. You know, you've put it out to the universe what you need, and it's there, and it's coming. And you can choose to pay attention to that, to watch for those things or not. And once you start, I mean, it's just incredible, the stories that start coming out of my classes, because once you start watching for the synchronicity, you think, yeah, I guess I really would like to, you know, do this or move in that direction. And then there's some phone calls, and then there's some people that you meet, and you can either pay attention or you can just let it go. So that's the synchronicity, and that's the sort of divine bit that comes in to help you on your path. Let's see, I forgot. I think I've talked enough about, just briefly about the circles that I, the Artist Way group that I facilitate. We follow the book, as I said, fairly closely. We limit it to 10 people. Any more than that really gets too much to establish the kind of bonding and intimacy that happens over 13 weeks. And we go through we do discussions from the book. As I said, I give everyone an art assignment, and some of the class is taken up by the sharing of the art that we do. Sometimes we do something artistic in class, create a card or do something that's very, very simple and very easy to do. And then we always end with a kind of a sacred circle. And we just light a candle in the middle, we sit around and we may sing a song, we may do some brief meditation, we do something to just honor the sacred, because this is what this is about. It's a sacred journey. So that's kind of, we also establish ground rules for the class, and so that everybody does feel safe. And it's like many kinds of groups, what happens in the group doesn't go out of the group, you know. In terms of what people may share, what people may say. And it's pretty amazing at how working through this process together in a group, how, first of all, how transformational it is, and how bonding it is. Most of the classes have wanted in some way to keep going when the class ended, and I encourage that. So any other just final questions? We're kind of out of time.
How long is the class period?
What? 2 hours.
2 hours.
Yeah, in 13 weeks. So we do, and the last week is a party, pretty much. You know, we have something called an artist dinner, and everybody dresses in ways that maybe they normally wouldn't. And everybody brings their food, keeping in mind that their dish is their art assignment for that week. And it may be in how it's served. One of my favorites is tossed salad, and they come with a sheet, you know. And people stand in the corners, and we toss the salad. So, you know, thinking of ways to either serve it or thinking of ways to do it. So the artist dinners are just, it's just a wonderful way to end the sessions, and very celebratory. I highly recommend it. I highly recommend the book. And are there any final questions?
Can you briefly say what the next book
is? Well, the next book, The Vein of Gold, it's all the same tools, you know, in fact, one extra tool, the walk, and just new ideas about how to use them. I'd use it, it kind of supplements the first. And we worked through it, as I said, with a class, but some of the chapters, it just doesn't break into chapters in the way that The Artist's Way does that makes the class easy. But it's a great one to go through on your own, and it's very powerful in the same way that the first was, and in new ways. People who did the first class were also very enriched by the second class. It was more the class format that was working as well, but still very powerful. More on music. She's gotten into music a lot, and there's a lot into that in that next book. So very rich. She now has one about the artist's way of work that I haven't seen. She just came out with. The only thing I don't know, I couldn't tell you anything about it because I haven't read it yet. The only thing that I found that wasn't particularly helpful was she had came out with an artist's way journal, and it sort of flew into the face of everything she said. It was just a big blank book, but it was all bound and very pretty. And when you write in those kind of books for your morning pages, not good. No, you want notebooks, you can rip it out, and you know, nothing fancy. So I don't know why she came out with that. I figured people bought it who hadn't read the book yet. That so probably so might.
Do you ever take the morning pages and just burn them out?
I haven't, but I easily could. For some reason, being the pack rat that I am, stick them all in boxes, and I'll never read them. And mostly, I wouldn't particularly want anybody to
read. Why would you want people to read your garbage?
You wouldn't. You really wouldn't. Yeah.
What's Julia's last name?
Cameron. Cameron. Very interesting woman. I had a chance to hear her speak one time or two. And a very interesting, unique sort of personality. Right out there. Interesting person. But an incredible writer. And I think this book is just an amazing gift. Any other questions? Well, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.